Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Lisnick Behind the Curtain, my opportunity to step away from the worlds of politics and law you watch me cover every day on WGN-TV into the world of my passion, theater and the arts. And today we get into just a show whose title will throw you, but it is so much fun, and you don't want to miss it while you get a chance, because this show is only playing until July 21st, being put on by the Token Theater, but in the friendly confined space of a Red Orchid Theater on Wells. Meet the cast, the writers of Zac Efron. Thank you for being with me. So good to see you. David Ree, you co-wrote this show. We're getting a lot about your life in this. And of course, YM. You know, if they give Jeff awards on this thing as time goes on, I think your name shows up in every category, because when I looked at it, if they give you a nomination for scenic design, who's that? Oh, why? Oh, well, who did the props? Oh, why? Oh, really? Well, who? Anyway. You did a lot.
But we won't be getting any nomination because this is our first production ever, so we're not qualified.
If it was up for me, I'd give it to you.
Thank you.
And Hansel Tan, who plays David in this show. Let's. And by the way, we should note that the show was directed by Alan Maroca. Am I saying his name right? Who people probably know from Sesame Street. I don't watch Sesame Street, but I get it. And so I grew up with a whole different set of like Garfield Goose and other kinds of things. But anyway, David, this is kind of like your life. You're the main playwright here. Why play the role? But let me come to you. Give us the story of why is it called Zac Efron? But I know the answer. Sure. I've seen the show.
It really just started 5 years ago. Why myself and Cheryl Hamada, who plays Mrs. Reed, David's mom, we're all out to dinner, and we were just talking about, you know, how are you? The pandemic was happening. Restaurants were just opening up. And we were just joking around with each other just because we needed it. And we were just talking about life during the pandemic. And one of the things that came up were dating apps. And Y and I were just having this just ridiculous banter. And Cheryl Hamada just goes, you need to write a play about this, dating during the time of COVID. And I went home and just typed something out within a week that was just horrendous, gave it to Y to read. And basically at that point, we just started sharing our life together. You know, hey, I'm looking at this right now online during the pandemic. And everything he sent to me, that Y sent, I just was like, oh, let's put this in play. And one of the things he sent was his tarot card readings that he was doing called On the Cusp of Tarot. And I just was fascinated by it and did a deep dive into that world of tarot because I am not familiar with it. And basically I was like, oh, this would be an interesting sort of like twist. You have the rom-com sort of genre. Add tarot to the mix. Let's just see what happens. So basically, we're just throwing everything that was going on in our lives into the play.
And by the way, the first iteration of the show, as I understand it, this is basically 90 minutes, no intermission. It's fast moving, fast paced. But that wasn't true for the first iteration of this.
Yeah, it was about over 2 hours. It was a tragedy. As a joke, there was a moment that Zac Efron, going back to your question about why Zac Efron, he was sort of mentioned in passing. And as a joke, I sent it to Y with the title Zac Efron. And underneath in parentheses, I wrote, the title will change. And he wrote back, no, it will not. Because he, you know, and he was right. I think there's a line in the play where it says, you know, share your wounds, David. And my idea was the play is going to be called Sharing Wounds. And he was like, no, it's not going to be called Sharing Wounds. It'll be called Zac Efron. So it stopped.
And, you know, but having seen the play, first of all, great humor in the show, but there is drama. I'm going to be careful not to give away some things that I don't think you can decide to give it away, but I think people need to experience, because there's some moments in the show that I didn't see coming. But we lived through them. And in fact, without being specific about that, why, I'll just ask you, how much of what we see on stage happened? And I'm going to make a reference to the latter part of the show where some surprising things happened. Did that happen in your world?
No, that did not happen. Like the big event did not happen in my real life. But there are elements of that scene that we both experience as a gay man out in public, out in private. So we just lean into to the danger of that. So yeah. So but everything else, I would say 50% of it is real. The family dynamic, the tarot aspect of it. Yeah, so I would say the rest of the show is 50% all live experience, and then the other half is makeup, and based on our experience, just kind of expand it.
Did you bring your tarot cards with you for this interview to
I have 1,000 tarot deck. Which one do you want?
the one that shows we're all going to be like happy and successful?
Great. I will bring that right there. I will just
Okay.
grab it. Everybody will have a happy ending in their own life. It's going to be a Disney movie for everyone.
I love it. Actually, can I, since I have you, just a secret thing. I mean, I'm familiar with tarot, but I don't know tarot. So you do, tarot shows up during the show in various ways. I'm sort of curious. Are the cards like, are they preset where you have to have certain cards, or do you rely on the fact that most people in the audience probably won't know it one way or another?
There's a couple cards that we need to preset it certain way because we mention the card and we show the audience the card. But the rest of it, we just, Hansel, we were struggling. We were like, how are we gonna preset this? We don't know. Are we gonna drop everything? Like, how can we get it? And then Hansel somehow is like, well, maybe I can do it this way. And clearly, he's very good with dealing with cards. And I was like, there it is. So, yeah, so a
A
couple of the
little,
cards reset.
yeah, a
Yeah.
little,
So,
lesser known fact about me is that I used to be obsessed with magic tricks as a kid. So I have all these, I have a slightly encyclopedic knowledge of false shuffles, which I've brought to the show to make sure that the right cards show up at the right time. But you're gonna have to see it for yourself.
Did you bring any magic decks with you for our interview?
No, I did not. But you can turn any deck into a magic deck with a little sleight of hand.
Wow. Well, I hope you guys, but I do lots of interviews from the Chicago Magic Lounge, and there's just so much magic in this town. A lot of table magic, it started in Chicago. So there's great history. If you're not familiar, let me know. We'll talk about it off camera. But Hansel, let me come to you because you play David. And I think the David you play is the David who's with us. So I'm sort of curious, as part of preparation for this, like, were you influenced or were you saying, David, don't worry about it? I'm going to play David the way I see David.
I think what really drew me to this play was the heart and the complexity and the truthfulness of the situations that a lot of Asian Americans, specifically gay Asian Americans, tend to face in culture and in large cities today. So because the play is not quite autobiographical, I felt it was important to bring part of my truth and part of my understanding of that culture that tends to be very hidden away from mainstream culture to an audience. I found myself drawing on the microcultures I had with my own best friend, who is also gay and happens to be Filipino, and the kinds of behavioral and community strategies for survival, for surviving in a big city like New York. And it's amazing to sort of look back and think that a lot of these strategies for survival are so hidden from view. And I think it's a very special thing for audiences to be able to bring them out of the open to show that these can be cultural strategies of survival that creates value for subjects like us.
Yeah, I think people who come to the audience, I mean, I think you obviously will get a lot from the Asian community, but also from the gay community who will come and see it. And of course, for whom, when you see, for me, memories of the app days and stuff are terrifying. But David, putting this together, there's a lot more to this show. I mean, I didn't know what to expect. And by the way, kudos to you because you're a new theater in town, which means you don't have huge budgets, but you've got computer things going on and technology. And so that really is amazing how you have that happen. And I have to say, just in case people think that all we're going to be watching on the screen are tied to the dating apps, the truth is there are family issues that are at the heart of this show as well, David. And I'm sort of curious, you told us when you started out, hey, why? Let's write about our lives in the world of, the dating apps and stuff. But I'm wondering whether the family relationship component, to me, so critical to the mission of Token Theater, I think. Talk to me about how that played the role, and was that really what propelled it?
Yeah, a lot of it's sort of like what I said before. A lot of the stuff that you see in the play, it was actually happening to us in real time as we were writing it. Some of our cast members, their fathers passed away during COVID. They got COVID and they passed away. So we put that into the story. There's a scene with Y and his mother, and it actually happened while we were writing the play. And while that was happening, this actual scene, I was typing it down. You know what I mean?
Wow.
And we talked about it and how that would contribute to the overall arch of the play. So, it's interesting that it's not just the family stuff, but all these things that were happening. Even, for example, what you'd asked why earlier about what happens in that big moment at the end of the play. There was a moment during COVID where Y was actually taking the bus, and someone started just throwing racial slurs at him. And in my head, I started thinking, what could that have built up to? And especially because of the AAPI hate crimes that were really just building up across the country, the thing that was going through my head was, as soon as Y told me the story about him being racially attacked on the bus, minding his own business. What was in my head was also my own mother going to Costco one day, and she, I was, I was getting the groceries from my parents. My mom was excited because she got me something from Costco, and she wanted me to know about it. She goes, "Hey, I bought you this from Costco," and all I heard what thought was, "Wait, you went to Costco?" And I do not yell at my mom, but I just blew up, and I was like, "What were you thinking?" And I was just, I'm thinking of what happened to why. I'm thinking about AAPI hate crimes across the country. And in my head, when my mom said she went to Costco by herself, I blew up at the thought of someone just going up to my mom and beating the shit out of her. And I remember hanging up the phone and just crying because, I couldn't do anything about it. You know what I mean? So the
Yeah.
only thing I could do at that point was to put it in the play. So a lot of the stuff with the family issues, it was stuff that was happening in real time, and it was stuff that was happening to us, and that I started thinking, what if this does happen? And
You
that's
just
what
introduced a third layer. So we start with the fun dating app thing that people go, oh, that'll be fun. And then we take it to the family issues. And then you take it to actually, let's take a look at the discrimination that goes on against the right AAPI community and all of that. And by the way, I have to, I don't know who cast her, but why I mentioned this to you when I met you, but Wai Ching Ho is a masterful job of casting as your mom. I've seen her perform in several shows, but her work at Looking Glass, just I interviewed her for that show. She's incredible. Kudos on casting her.
Yay. It was a happy incident. We were slotted to have Cheryl to play both mother live, actually. We were not gonna do the video element to it, but because of personal reasons, she cannot do it. So we were like, what are we gonna do? And we talked to Equity and we were able to secure the right to do the video contract. And then we were like, well, since we can do the video contract, maybe we should do two different people for the two mother. And I personally know Wai Ching Ho while she was doing the Looking Glass show.
Lucy and
And
Charlie Brown, yeah.
yeah, her and me and my mother went to lunch one day because we're all from Hong Kong. So I said that if I ever need someone to play my mother, I will call you first. And voila. And she was like, I'm available. Great. So then there she is. So
I
we're
love it.
very, very happy and grateful that she joined.
Were you born on Hong Kong side or Kowloon side?
I'm Kowloon.
Okay.
Yep.
It was one of my favorite places. I love being there, although I think I got ripped off on Nathan Road. We'll talk about that some other time.
Of course.
Here, I'll give you the Sony for $20. That's not a Sony. I ran out of those.
Yes.
So Hansel, by the way, speaking of the video thing, so there are moments we see conversations that you have with your parents, you certainly, also on the phone, whatever, but the timing of that, because if that's all, and it is pre-recorded video, you got to be very careful. Well, may I be, I don't know. Do you have to be very careful in terms of the timing of saying your lines, or is there somebody hitting a button here for the next moment of the video?
Oh no, it's all cylinders on fire once the stage manager presses go and then the video just plays through. And there have been maybe a couple of times where I've missed a couple cues. We won't really go into that. But it's always slightly nerve-wracking to know that there's a fixed element and you have to play with that fixed element. But what was really wonderful recording that scene with Cheryl Hamada was that while she was recording, I was off to the side silently feeding her the lines. And so we were working out the beats and the rhythm of the scene together. It was a very joint effort. And I think that really helped to bake in an understanding of how the scene flowed that just got translated into real time that we sort of rediscover every single night.
You guys are in a very intimate space, a Red Orchid Theater. And of course, in many ways, luck came your way because the show that they were, that Red Orchid Theater was doing was Turret. And they had to move that to a larger theater because of Michael Shannon starring in that, which I understand. As I said, I interviewed him during that show and he was stuck on a, did I tell you the story? He was in New York and he got stuck. His cast member said he's not going to be able to be with us. He's stuck on a bus. And he actually then joined us from the bus and talked through. He's just amazing. And then he got off the bus, sat on a bench and finished the interview. But anyway, so Hansel, let me stay with you. Because you've done a lot of theater. I mean, I know your background. You've done a lot of shows. This is an incredibly intimate space that you're working in. Do you prefer that? Do you like being this close to an audience, especially with all your costume changes or non-costume changes or whatever you want to call it? You're right with us there. How does that impact you in terms of the space?
I kind of love it. I kind of love that everything's so compact. I kind of love that we're all breathing the same air. And I kind of love that with a smaller space like this, there's an understanding that things are happening in real time. There's a feeling of immediacy you don't quite get with a larger space and a distance from the audience. But, you know, in terms of the actor, it demands a certain precision. You can't not, there cannot be one single bone in your body that lies on stage. Everything has to be tapped in and tuned in. And I think it's a really special, beautiful kind of energy. It reminds me of my time in New York working at the Flea Theater back when it was on White Street in Chinatown. And there's something irreplaceable with that kind of energy. I love it.
By the way, well, I have to ask you, because I feel like because you play yourself in this, I feel like I'm interacting with that why. You're funny. You're all this stuff. So the why we see on stage, is that who you are?
75%, I would imagine. I'm not always on, like, oh my god, you guys, like, I'm not 24/7 like that. That would be exhausting. But for my YouTube channel during the pandemic, I do need to have that persona because, you know, it just immediately drawn to people online. So I do have wigs and do all the act that I do online. In real life.
Are you still doing that? But does that still happen?
No, I still have the channel up. I haven't, you know, deleted it or anything. It's just a nice memorabilia, I would say. Maybe I will go back and do one or two special night, you know, tarot reading, and then all of the Zac Efron audience can come see it. And I will put in an email, hey, CY in real action online giving tarot reading. I don't know.
I'm going to go search this out and check out what some of those videos
are. Oh, no.
And then we'll get together again and talk about this.
Yes.
Post that. You know, David, let me turn serious for a moment, because while we're talking about Zac Efron, which people have until the 21st of July to see, I want to go broader than that, because people who are watching or listening to this interview after that time, maybe you've missed the show. Bad on you. But we're going to wait for the next production of Token Theater, because there is a mission, and I've gone through your website. I've gotten as informed as I can. You all have a mission of what you want Token Theater to do. I mean, Zac Efron may be the first. It won't be the last. And I don't think the next show you're going to do is Hello, Dolly. So you have a mission, Dave. And I'm just coming to David with the question. I know you'd all speak to this, but you're trying to change the world here a little bit.
You know what? It's funny. It's when we came up with the mission statement, and we looked at hundreds of mission statements across the country from other theater companies. And there was something interesting in terms of what we saw with a lot of theater companies, and this is not to negate or to criticize whatsoever, but the bottom line with a lot of theater companies' mission statements was to make good theater, which sounded almost redundant, right? Of course. But for us, it had to be something bigger than that. And for us, it's about challenging the narrative, because our stories have always been written by someone else, right? It's always been written also within a specific context, whether it's in the context of this huge tragedy or, you know, immigration or the Vietnam War, stories that had nothing to do with us and yet have come to define us over the years.
Well, so you said the night we met, Miss Saigon and the King of I, and we've got the history.
Exactly. That is the history of Asian Americans all of a sudden. And we decided, let's tell our stories, whatever that looks like, right? And it was interesting to see what happened during the pandemic. All of a sudden, there was this huge paradigm shift. Two things happened. One thing happened before the pandemic, which for me was Hamilton. It changed the whole landscape of theater single-handedly. But then also the pandemic sort of exacerbated and sped up the process, meaning it brought artists of color, authors of colors, actors of colors onto the main stage. But what happened if you looked at what was being put on stage? Because, for example, I was in a show called Thoroughly Modern Millie. It won 6 Tony Awards. It took 10 years for it to develop, right? Because that's how long a good play needs to simmer and develop. But what all of a sudden was happening was there was this fear that sort of it was embedded in theater companies across America. And all of a sudden they were like, we need to put authors of color, shows of colors on stage immediately. So without giving it time to really simmer, to grow, to develop, they just pushed them on stage. And some of them were great, and some of them were not great. So all of a sudden people stopped coming, and you see these, they have data now, and you see this in the New York Times, the Chicago Tribune, and the LA Times, where people are saying that people stopped going to theater. And a lot of people were pointing to the fact that, well, of course, they're putting these minority shows on stage and people weren't interested. And that's not the case at all. What was happening was instead of giving them the time to develop, time to really grow, it's let's put these shows up on stage immediately without the normal growth time, you know? So what we're trying to do, it's so just like, well, it's a huge dream. We're hoping, you know, but at this point, it's really to change and challenge the narrative of Asians in America, yes, but also to give people time and space to develop, to fail, to get up, to redo, you know, to rewrite. And that's something that's it's difficult, not gonna lie, and takes a lot of time, a lot of work. But it's something that we hope we can accomplish because it's that important to us.
Well, I think you can. And, you know, when you say sort of Hamilton changed the world, when that show premiered here, I interviewed that cast and, you know, and I talked about the colorblind casting of it all, which is part of what changed everything. Although, Andy Blankenbuehler, I think, said to me, we don't really call it colorblind casting. It really came down to cast the right person for the role. The current touring George Washington is Asian. So it didn't, you know, it wasn't about cast so-and-so who has to look like George Washington anymore. And I think a lot to be learned, but I have to say I'm guilty too, because I go see a show and whoever's in the show is in it. And it's my partner who's Filipino who with every show looked and said there wasn't one Asian in that show. What he notices every single show who's in it, how many, and also, and I started getting sensitive to that and started
You know, it's interesting.
recognizing.
With Hamilton, the assistant director and I were talking, and I said, "Hey, I saw this. I saw Hamilton. Loved it. Loved it. We're the Asians, you know." And it was, and he said that we're very aware of this, and this is something that we're really pushing for. And for the Sit Down Chicago production, they went out of the way to try to cast, you know, outside of even the New York production. So, you know, it's just something that we believe in. We also realize that there is a huge audience that believes in our mission. We were just talking yesterday with some of our one of our grant foundations, and we were talking about this idea that stuff like this has happened in Chicago before, and people have come, no matter how good, how great, people have come. There's an interest, there's an audience for it. There's just no real vehicle right now that exists except for token theater. So we're excited to try to fill that void. I think you're muted.
I was saying, if you do Thoroughly Modern Millie, will you cast Hansel and Y in that show?
Oh, heck yeah. Ching Ho and Bun Fu, done.
I wouldn't do that show.
I want to be Seven thoughts to row. I want to tap dance. Let's put it that way.
Okay, but yeah, we'll go for it. So, why? Let me ask you. So, as David kind of lays the mission, but a lot of what he just talked about is Asian or Asian American visibility in theater. I totally get that. But there is that racism and discrimination piece of this. And you, of course, also a founder here of Token Theater. So how much of the mission do you see that being? In other words, yes, we want more visibility for the community, but at the same time, we need to address this ridiculous and inexplicable discrimination that exists. It's not just Asian Americans. I mean, it's certainly different groups, but I don't know what's wrong with people. But how much will we see future productions address that?
I didn't found the company. I just joined, like, 2 years after they created the
Oh, I
company.
thought you were on that ground level. Okay.
No, I'm the second generation. I just joined to help them out. right before the pandemic. There's an element of the company that we want to nourish the next generation of playwright, the next generation of actor, the next generation of director, because we also feel like the theater always say that, well, we want to cast Asian, but there's no talent there. They don't have, it's not talented enough. They haven't worked enough, and all that reasoning. And then it always come back to me as in like, so how are we gonna achieve that? You don't give them a chance to practice, and then you said that they don't have the talent to do your show. So we will never have the chance to do your show because we never get the chance to practice either way. So in a way that, me and David, trying to restructure what else can we do besides performing, besides writing our own play, besides putting up production, is kind of like the education wings, or if you want to call it that way, to nourish the next generation of playwrights. So, giving time to develop, to work with each other, to collaborate with locals or national artists like Hansel, like Alan, so that they have the connection, they can build. Oh, yes, we did the workshop together in Chicago. I'm in New York now. Can we, work together or whatever? So that we build up the network for all of them too. So in that way, we have a little, I don't want to say stepping stone or whatever, just, make sure that they can jump to the next step easier. So that's what I'm hoping for the token theater in the next generation, or the next 5 or 10 years, can achieve, to nourish the next generation while we are still doing plays and putting up production that will change the narrative of how Asian American perceive to the general audience.
And Hansel, as an actor, you've just heard what your two friends have said. How are you driven by those missions, or are you sort of saying, look, I'm an actor, and so I'm just going to act?
Wow, this is a really big question. But to try and narrow it down a little bit, I feel like I've graduated from the phase do things for the career into this period of my life where I do things where the impact is, and I see the most impact here. A theater company like this that can make a really big splash with a really big statement, is where I think my time and my energy is most conducive, to being invested in. And so, I believe in their mission. I believe in what they're doing. And that drives me both as an artist and as a collaborator. Yeah, that's where I have decided to.
Do you see, David, do you see yourself? I don't know if Second City has a Victor Wong Fellowship every year, and so it's only Asian Americans who are part of that class. And then they just did this a little while ago, and I went to see their Second City show, but all Asian cast. And what I loved about it is there's all these cultural norms or cultural pieces in it that if you know, but you don't, like there's a scene, they all walk in, they take their shoes off. It's just stuff like if you sort of understand the culture, you get it when they do it, and if you don't, it just happens. How much, David, do you see Token Theater as teaching others? So it's one thing to get exposure for Asian Americans. It's another thing to address the racism. But do you see a mission in future shows that you plan to do as let's teach a little, let people understand some of our culture?
That's a great question. A friend of mine, we just had lunch and we just talked about this idea. And the thing that I said was, it's strange to put that type of burden on a theater company. Ultimately, it's like, is that burden on the Goodman Theater to teach whiteness, for example? Do you know what I mean? And yet, for a minority theater company, it's all of a sudden, we're not just a theater company, but we have to do XYZ, and the unfairness and the inequity of that. Do you know what I mean? To me, it's not so much about teaching as it is, and this sounds so trite, but I genuinely mean it, just putting on good shows. And I know that, and if I went into that, so how am I defining a good show? That's another thing altogether. But it's true. What we're doing in our mission statement, yes, is about rewriting the narrative of Asian Americans. But we're doing that by putting on good theater. All three of us here, we're here because we're theater nerds, period. You know what I mean? It's not. I don't. I can't speak for the other two, but for myself, I did not get into this because I was like, I want to change the world and let them see Asian. That came because of how I was treated within the show business world, right? But I got into this because I love theater. I love acting. I love Storytelling. It's so, I am that nerd who like can like quote all these lines from Seinfeld. It's like, and I just love theater. So it to me, yeah, we are going to be telling stories from, Asian American authors, Asian American actors, blah 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 blah. And if the teaching happens, it's a byproduct of good shows, of good storytelling, period.
And why, oh, by the way, if you have you seen Brother's Son? If you haven't seen the series Brother's Son with Michelle Yeoh and others, it's fantastic. And Tokyo Vice, which is also with anyway, a couple of shows just to, because they're. Although I noticed one of the things you said when I met you, David, was how even where Asian Americans are the highlight, it never takes place in America. And so now Brother's Son does. That came into my head and went, "Ooh, check that out." But anyway, why? How about you? Do you agree with David? So is it sort of like, look, I'm here to put on good theater, or do you feel culturally that no, I do have a message to share?
I also feel like there's a line in the play, say theater is a mirror to the society. So I think that's what is the easiest way. If we just put up a mirror for them to see, they can learn what we our culture, they can see our culture, they can see things on stage that are reflected at the moment or the history of Asian Americans. So I think that is enough. For me personally, I always don't like plays that are didactic. They are like, in your face telling you what to do. This is us, learn about our history and all that. And I just kind of like, okay, if I want to learn it, I will go buy a book. I will just do my research online. So I do feel like the other way, just putting up a mirror in front of their faces so that they can see what is happening is more effective, and that will encourage them to actually Google, oh, that was the story about this and that. And I think that impact more than us telling them, because they can just say, yeah, I learned that history lesson at Token Theater. So that must be everybody is. Then that's actually will be worse. That's what we don't want to do. So yeah, so we want to make sure that the fine line is there. We are just a mirror of the society. You're going to do your own research, you're going to do your own learning, and we hope that you'll understand us and appreciate us more.
Well, sometimes I try and see the place, so I don't have to read the book, but that's because I'm lazy. Hansel, what is next as the show closes on July 21st? An actor moves from one project to the next. I guess what I mean is, are you working, continue working with Token Theater to see what are we doing next, or do you say?
I know that there will be collaborations down the road in the future. I am actually going through a bit of a life change myself.
Talk to us, talk to us.
I am moving to Philadelphia to join the faculty of a university as an assistant professor of performance. So I'm adding educator
So all
to.
the teaching stuff that these guys don't want to do, you're picking up the anvil there.
There is a research paradigm. I sort of operate at the intersection of neuroscience and body cognition and performance practice, but also I'm very interested in the way stories are told and how our bodies convey storytelling. That's just the research paradigm, but I think what's really important for myself is to keep my performance practice alive in as many places as possible to demonstrate to my students that it is all connected. I'm excited to keep collaborating with
Yeah,
these
congratulate. Listen,
people.
somebody is I used to teach University of Illinois. I've got my doctorate, whatever, and that was a great world that I was happy to leave when I left it. But great when I did it. So, David, maybe I will come to you, since Y is the second year in on Token Theater. What is next for Token Theater? Are you writing the next play? Are you selecting the next play?
I think our dream right now is what we talked about before, which is we want to start, and we've already begun to collect different plays from different voices, and we want to create a space so that we can do in-house readings. We can choose maybe two or three to do public readings, give authors time to develop their plays, so that ultimately we'll choose one in maybe a year or two within that sort of paradigm I just explained, and actually produce that play. So really giving space to new playwrights to be able to see their work, to develop their work, that's something that we're really excited about right now.
And of course, you're transient right now because you're still going to look for a home, right? A more permanent home, or we'll see you go from different places. And I wish you well on all of that. I want people to see Zac Efron. Don't miss it. It's playing through July 21st. Oh, I wish it was longer. It is so good. It's so funny. It's so dramatic. It has such meaning. I just really, we just kind of sat there afterwards and just were really wowed by it. So I congratulate you. Tickets are at tokentheater.net. Theater is spelled the proper British way. Hansel, you'll appreciate that. T-R-E. Tokentheater.net, where you can also make a donation, which I did because I really want to support the work you guys are doing. I hope this will be the first of many times that we talk and that maybe Professor Tan will join us again in the future.
Yes, thank you so much.
Break legs for the rest of the run, everybody, and I'll see you soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sure, Paul. Thank you.
Bye-bye.